Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. Welcome in. It is Hump Day Wednesday. What day is this, by the way? I've been doing so many things. It's the 11th. It's the 11th of January already, 2023, almost to the middle of the month. Welcome in on an exciting and news-filled Wednesday, as a matter of fact. Great guest coming up. We have Trygve Olsen from the Lincoln Project joining us in just a bit to talk about the race that was in terms of the House Speaker's race and Kevin McCarthy. Talk about a little bit of migration issues and how that might affect Republicans and Democrats trying to attract Latinos to the polls in 2024. And also, as an owner, the owner of the Green Bay Packers will be here to talk to us, Trygve Olsen, shareholder of the Packers, and tell us his year in review, what he thinks of his team, what he thinks of his coaches. He will be in and talk to us very shortly. And also, we're going to talk to our reporter in the airports this morning. If you haven't heard, there is a major news happening as the FAA has grounded most airlines. And we had breaking news just moments ago that apparently that has now been lifted or is in the process of being lifted. And they're going to try to get several of these flights going. But here at the Todd Albaugh Show, Civic Media, we are on the spot. My godson is at O'Hare Airport this morning, trying to take off. He is going to join us in just a few minutes to give us a little man on the street reporting here. And so that'll be interesting and give us a flavor, because this is not fun at all for a lot of folks who are trying to get out. Because a lot of people, of course, use airlines to do their business travel. A lot of people trying to get home. And so, of course, on top of this, the Southwest Airlines fiasco of a couple of weeks ago, and now you have this. So we shall see. We'll hear from Jason in just a couple of minutes here. Right now, though, we're going to give you a little flavor of your weather across the state of Wisconsin. Many schools are delayed across western and northern Wisconsin today as we have that freezing fog happening in many places. We talked about this yesterday, freezing fog, where you have this heavy, dense fog, and then it flash freezes on a cold surface, a roadway, causing a lot of problems. And then further up north, some snow north of La Crosse in that area on top of the freezing fog. So not fun at all. Your weather forecast across the state of Wisconsin in our listening area this morning in WRCE, Richland Centerland. Decreasing clouds throughout the morning, a high of 42. So if you get through the morning, it's going to be balmy for Wisconsin later this afternoon, 42 degrees. Then for tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 28. And Thursday in Richland Center, mostly cloudy and a high of 33. In Wausau this morning, we have a winter weather advisory out for much of the area, freezing drizzle before 9 a.m. this morning, and then a high near 34 degrees. Tonight, or rather later on today, more freezing drizzle. Then for tonight, a low of 28 degrees, and tomorrow Thursday in Wausau, mostly cloudy at a high of 33. Then on from beautiful Amory, WXCE land in northwest Wisconsin, winter weather advisory for today, freezing drizzle, patchy fog, a high of 33. Tonight, a low of 20. And on Thursday, mostly cloudy and a high of 22. We bring you only the latest news here at the Todd Albaugh Show. Civic Media standing by at O'Hare Airport this morning to give us an on-the-ground report. My favorite youngest godson, Jason Kohler. Jace, how are things looking at O'Hare this morning?
Good morning, Todd.
You sound a little groggy. Jason left at what, midnight last night from Madison?
Yeah, I'm kind of running on only an hour of sleep here. And then when I sat down here at O'Hare at around 6 in the morning, maybe a little earlier, 5 in the morning, I saw the news break on Twitter about the FAA in shambles. So I've kind of just been holding down the fort here, waiting for more news. But things are slowly starting to move around again. And
So your flight, you're trying to get out to Washington D.C. this morning. Do you have a direct flight from O'Hare, or you have a connecting flight?
Direct flight.
All right.
Yeah, we're just kind of we've had a few date changes so far, delayed 3 hours at least.
Ugh.
But yeah, things are resuming here again. So life has found a way.
You've flown quite a bit, Jason, out of O'Hare. And when you say that things look kind of normal as far as the crowd, or are there a lot of extra lines? Kind of what's the flavor? What's the feel on the ground?
Everything in the terminal looks fine. Looks normal operations. We got through the security and everything before everything kind of shut down. So as far as I could see, everything was operating normally. And then just no flights were moving out of the gates or down the runway at all. No departures whatsoever.
When you looked up on the the departure board, is pretty much everything sailed, canceled, or delayed?
Yeah, some of them still say on time, but as the news was slowly breaking, is like more and more of them were delayed. So it's like a slow virus kind of creeping around.
And God knows we don't need any more viruses creeping around, airline or otherwise, right? Well, we can tell you that according to CBS's Chris Van Cleave, transportation reporter, about 2 minutes ago, he says the FAA saying operations are resuming. Normal air traffic operations are resuming gradually across the United States following that overnight outage to the FAA's Notice of Air Mission system that provides safety information flights to crews. So, Jason Kohler, thanks for giving us that report on the ground. Safe travels and take care of yourself. All right.
Will do.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jason. Live on the ground reporting from O'Hare Airport this morning. When we come back, we'll be live with Trigvi Olson on the Lincoln Project. Stay with us. You're listening to the Todd Allbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Show the Civic Media Radio Network. That is going out to Jason, my youngest godson. Trigvi Olson sending that out to him. Bad company. He says, do not fly through O'Hare, no matter if there's an FAA crisis or not. We welcome in Trigvi Olson of the Lincoln Project, as per usual, on a Wednesday. Trigvi, how are things out in our nation's capital today?
They're good. I'm actually...
Oh, you're not in the nation's capital.
I am in the nation's capital today. I'm actually headed back to River Falls, Hudson. In a couple of days with my daughter.
Very nice. Well, be careful of the freezing fog.
And I got to be careful of the freezing fog, and I need to avoid O'Hare at all costs.
You've had some experience. You've flown a lot in your career.
Yes.
Not the place you want to be, O'Hare. For those that might just be joining, in all seriousness, there is this FAA problem in terms of a computer. It's the safety system, basically kind of like where the pilots file their flight plans and whatnot, went down. All airlines were grounded this morning, or at least most flights were, but now we're having word that those flights are now starting to resume as those systems come back online. We heard from my godson, O'Hare, things are calm, but most flights are delayed and slowly starting to hopefully take off. So that's the big news this morning. Also, President Joe Biden, off of his trip to Mexico, talking about migration, now back in Washington, monitoring this, and of course also monitoring the fact that we'll talk a little bit about this with Trigvi later, that the Justice Department was informed by the Biden administration that there were some classified documents in then former Vice President Biden's office, now President Biden. A little difference, though, in my opinion. We'll talk to Trigvi about that. Self-reporting versus an investigation. And we'll talk about that. I want to talk to, first of all, Trigvi, the lotto has come home. The numbers are in. And I'm not talking about the $1 billion that apparently was not won last night. But I'm talking about the race that was out in Washington, D.C. last week with the Speaker of the House race. And we had talked a lot about this last week. Neither one of us really saw a way for Kevin McCarthy to get there, but he did. What's your first impression? Did you watch last night in real time or last Friday in real time?
I watched most of it, and then I had an old man's hockey game, and I decided that took precedence.
And see, this is the difference between Trigvi and I. He has a social life. I have none. So I'm sitting at home watching all this unfold, and this is my high entertainment for the night. And I don't know, do you know that, I forget what the congressman was, that went on the floor went and leaned down to Matt Gaetz just as they were going to adjourn, and he said something. And God,
it was Mike Rogers from Alabama.
There you go.
They almost got in a fight.
What did he say? What did he say that made Matt Gaetz just look down and say, okay? And moments later, Kevin McCarthy raced to the front of the well, and there's a procedure in Congress where you get it's a card, basically, that you say, I want a do-over, and they basically re-voted to not adjourn so that they could then have a final 15th ballot, and Gaetz and his cohorts voted present, and McCarthy became Speaker. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the process of it was one piece to it. I think the bigger narrative in it that people have to recognize, and McCarthy said this at 2:30 a.m. This, I was back from my hockey game and did see, so I was still up. You know, the first person he thanked was Donald Trump for getting him across the finish line.
Right.
And so one of the points that, you know, as I've been out talking, as Lincoln Project's been out talking, is that, you know, we've been saying for a long time, Donald Trump has not gone away. Donald Trump is still the most powerful figure in the Republican Party. And I think that's what you saw. You know, McCarthy was dead in the water until Trump came along and basically told Gaetz and those others to vote present. And so that got him across the line. I think, well, that and basically giving away all the powers of the speakership.
Right. They're called Spino now, Speaker in name only?
Yes, Speaker in name only. The only reason to me, and I have been pretty critical of Kevin McCarthy, but the only reason you do that is personal ambition, right? Like you're clearly not an institutionalist. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is institutions have to matter for democracy to work. And why you would do that solely for power, it says a lot about what Kevin McCarthy is all about. And, you and I worked back in the Wisconsin, God, we're getting old, but you know, we were back when Tommy Thompson was still around and was governor. And anybody who was around long enough when Tommy was governor would hear him say, you know, that there were two kinds of people, those who wanted to be and those who wanted to do. And Kevin McCarthy clearly is a guy who wants to be. Mm-hmm. And you know, he was giving that anecdote about his father. It's not where you start, it's where you finish. I think probably the better analogy is careful what you wish for, but it's pretty crazy. He did successfully avoid getting Scalise put in nomination. If Scalise had been put in nomination, he was done.
Yeah, I thought so as well. And I thought, we talked about this on this show yesterday, a little bit about this influence of Trump and who the real winner was. And again, no matter how much these folks, whether it's national Republicans or Republicans in Wisconsin, keep wanting to spin the narrative of, I don't want to talk about 2020. I want to move on. This is about the future. You know, Donald Trump isn't important. We want to move on. But no one is actually renouncing him. No one of any importance. Nobody like, you know, DeSantis. DeSantis doesn't even want to actually denounce him. And until we see Republican leaders on the national stage actually denouncing Donald Trump, And moreover, to your point, quit listening to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is still the leader of the Republican Party.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is a piece where my work around the world with those fighting for democracy in places where democracy is taking hold is relevant. It's an illiberal vertical. The Republican Party is set up like an autocratic regime with Donald Trump sitting at the top of it, whether Republicans want to admit that or not. And that's true with the RNC race. There's a race for chair of the RNC. And Ronna Romney McDaniel, she's still Ronna Romney McDaniel to me. She's Ronna Romney in most circles because Trump made her drop the Romney. But or Ronna McDaniel. But here's the thing, is like she's going to go down to an even more Trumpy candidate from California. Mm-hmm. the fighting that's going on is within, is all positioning within. And everybody talks about Ron DeSantis. You know, we haven't seen if Ron DeSantis can take a punch. Ron DeSantis is basically trying to out-Trump Trump with all kinds of woke, you know, I'm fighting against the imaginary wokeism that really I don't think exists as much as he thinks. And what's he attacking? He's attacking Disney. If there ever were a company that's part of what makes America great, it's Disney. I mean, you know,
when you're fighting Mickey Mouse, if that's your enemy, and by the way, and ESPN now as well. I mean, you're taking them both on.
Right, but ESPN is owned as part of the Disney family.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, when you take on Disney, you're taking not only Mickey Mouse, you're taking on Disney, you're taking on ABC. I mean, go right down the line, all these Disney properties.
But you know what? That is not unusual either when you have these actors that are autocratic actors. Anybody who's seen, you know, like Putin plays ice hockey and scores like 9,000 goals against their Olympic team, the autocratic people with autocratic personality disorder, when they achieve power, want to like place themselves within everything. They don't like that when we go to the Green Bay Packer game, people are wearing green and gold. They're not wearing red or blue. Right. They want to be in the middle of everything in a very unhealthy way. And oftentimes they masquerade it as, well, this is normal democracy, because, you know, John Kerry and George W. Bush both went to Lambeau Field, and most politicians running statewide in Wisconsin show up there and shake hands. There's nothing wrong with that. But when they try and place themselves at the center of sports itself, Donald Trump did try and do that. You know, that's an attempt to not have anything that isn't infected with politics.
And I thought it was so interesting. This week we saw this start to play out. It was almost like, you know, we've exported autocracy to South America, where in Brazil you have the outgoing autocratic dictator president leaving, and then they basically pull a January 6th in Brazil, and mm-hmm. meanwhile the outgoing president is seeking a harbor in Florida.
Yeah. Right. He's at Mar-a-Lago. Yeah, I mean, there's some connections there with not direct connections, but I mean, you had people like Jason Miller and some of the people around Trump who were involved in his campaign, and Bannon, at least based on public reports. I think, you know, Brazil ended up being a case where you had a far left versus far right guy. Mm-hmm. And neither choice was really ideal. And that's really the fear, quite honestly, that we should all have here, you know, for people who are in the center, is that our politics reaches a point where you get, you know, two candidates who are extreme on both sides. And then you're really left with no choice for the majority of people. And people have to remember, and this is particularly true in Wisconsin, you know, the middle is the majority. We're just not the majority in primaries on either side.
Yeah. And so, too, and gerrymandering, of course, and the way they draw the mm-hmm. districts kind of just propels that as we go to the polls. Just to put a button on the speaker's race in Congress as we move into the next couple of years, can they get anything done in the House, or is it just going to be a dysfunction for 2 years?
Think they're going to get investigations done, a lot of them around contrived and imaginary grievance. And again, it will be to create what about? It'll be like Benghazi, you know. Mm-hmm. Benghazi, Benghazi is a good example of this. You know, Benghazi was a case where the reality is, you know, the ambassador, Chris Stevens, made a decision to go to where he went and knew it was going to be dangerous, and, you know, people showed up to kill him, and those in power had really hard choices, and there were no good answers. Mm-hmm. And most people go through their lives never facing life and death choices. And most people really go through their lives without ever being in the case where no matter what choice they make is a bad choice. Mm-hmm. It's going to be bad. And, but people in government face that all the time. And people can create bogus grievance around that for political means. And that's really unhealthy. And I think you're going to see a lot of that in the new Congress.
It's going to be a show, that's for sure. Not always one that our nation needs to go through, but it certainly will be a show to some degree. We'll come back. More of our show with Trevi Olson and the Lincoln Project. After this, you're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Allball Show with the Civic Media Radio Network. Time is 8:32 on the 11th of January, 2023. Wednesday hump day as per usual. Now on Wednesdays, we are honored and happy to be joined by Trevi Olson, Senior Advisor to the Lincoln Project. In case you're just joining us and headed to the airport, latest news out of Washington, FAA saying that the flights across the United States are now starting to resume after having been grounded this morning due to a computer glitch in the FAA system. Again, this was not a, unlike the Southwest, this was not a particular airline glitch. This was a glitch in the safety systems where basically pilots file their flight plans and this sort of thing. And so they had to delay all the flights until that got fixed. It's in the process, and we had our on-the-ground reporter earlier, i.e. my godson, Ed O'Hare, saying that the flights are starting to resume in O'Hare. And your travel tip for the morning, Trevi Olson says, never fly through O'Hare. So take that for what it's worth. We welcome Trevi back. One of the things I want to get your take on, Trevi, is we saw the President Biden this week go to the border. And this is something I am not without a lens on this. I used to do immigration issues for Congressman Klug when I worked for him. I've been a part of the Central American Scholarship Program at UW-Richland. Many of my friends are from Central America, El Salvador in particular. I've been there 39 times. I've been to the embassy there. I've stood in line. And if I don't talk to reveal my bad Spanish and I have a little bit of a tan, I can pass for Salvadoran. And I've seen how some of the – and many of our folks in – used to be INS and now ICE and the Immigration Service, many fine career diplomats and fine people. But I've seen firsthand – that when people go to the windows and the way they're treated and the way they're threatened, if you ask any more questions, essentially, I'll give you another 6 months before you can come back. And my argument has always been, and this goes back to the late 90s when I would go with former state senator, or state U.S. Senator Herb Coles, one of his top people, Eve Galanter, who I'm sure you remember, and Eve and I would go to these things in Milwaukee to INS. And we would hear the stories directly from the INS workers of how they're simply understaffed, how they're underfunded, and how basically neither Republicans or Democrats want to cross into that area and actually address the problem of how to speed up legal immigration. Meanwhile, on the other side, and again, this goes back to former U.S. Senator Bob Casten, Republican of Wisconsin, who started the Central American Scholarship Program through USAID with the whole idea that, hey, maybe instead of taking billions of dollars and putting towards this faux war at the time with the former Soviet Union in Cuba and in Central America, why not take some of these dollars through the State Department and actually bring folks from there here, young people, give them a liberal arts education, expose them to democracy with the requirement that they go home and then grow that democracy from within. That was a Republican idea from Wisconsin U.S. Senator Bob Casten. We don't hear things like that anymore. And I'll shut up in a second, but you're someone who has traveled the world, dealt in other countries. One of the things that's happening in El Salvador right now, again, I have mixed feelings on, you had Nayib Bukele become president here a couple of years ago and is overwhelmingly popular. Now, he has taken some autocratic and dictatorial moves in using the military and complete disregard for human rights and rounding up gangs. But from people I know who have been there recently, it is much safer, and the Salvadoran people are much happier. And also, Salvadorans are now dropping in the number of those Salvadoran people trying to come here both legally and illegally. So again, improving the condition. I'm not saying that the way it was done was something I would do or agree with, but conditions in El Salvador are improving. So all that said, Trygve Olsen, based on your experience here and abroad, what are your takes on this whole migration issue, the way it's unfolding right now in the U.S.?
Well, I think it operates on a couple of levels. You hit on one big piece of this, which is, you know, foreign aid gets bagged on all the time, right? Right. That foreign aid accounts for like less than 0.1% of the entire U.S. budget. Mm-hmm. But what foreign aid does do is things like what you're talking about with Kasten. It brings, you know, some of the best and the brightest from these countries to the U.S. They study, they are required to go back home, and hopefully they contribute. You know, my wife was a beneficiary of one of those programs. She was a Muskie Fellow. She went back and was the top national security person in Lithuania, or one of them, for, you know, almost a half a decade, because she went to Georgetown. And that was, you know, good for the U.S., good for Lithuania. But they get down there. You know, the crisis on the southern border is a function primarily of people wanting to escape crime, wanting economic, not being able to feed their kids, you know, so there's that element of it. Like, we have to figure out, I do a bunch of work in one of those countries in Central America for a client, and have for, you know, 12, 15 years. It's hard. Like, if you can't feed your kids, or the crime situation is so bad that you're worried about them dying, and you've got a place across the border that you can escape to where you can have a pretty good life, or your kids can't eat, but you can go up and do work that Americans aren't wanting to do, and make 100 times what you could make at home, you're going to take that opportunity. Most of us are fortunate that we haven't been in that position. So we've got to address that first and foremost. And then there's the whole system, and you alluded to that, internally. And that's broken too, right? Like, and it's broken in part because they're understaffed. It's broken in part because you have a lot of politicians injecting themselves into it. Mm-hmm. And it's broke, I think, in part because, you know, immigration, who gets in and out of the country, most people may not know this, it's a function of multiple departments. State right. Department issues visas, right? Mm-hmm. You have ICE, Homeland Security. It's crazy, mm-hmm. the bureaucracy.
It is, and people don't understand the red tape. And again, I've said this to people, if you have a family member or a friend who has a bed for you, and there's a job that an American don't want, and you're willing to do it, and I've said this before, If your life is, most Central Americans, just like us, I guess, mm-hmm. right? I mean, given the choice, they would rather stay where they were born in their home mm-hmm. country, where their friends and family are. But as you said, the conditions get so bad that they would rather take it, oftentimes, if they're coming illegally, to risk their lives to have a better life here, not unlike some of my own relatives from Europe who came here risking their lives across on a boat for a better life. The only difference is my relatives were white and these folks are brown. And it's still the American dream, right? And so they're trying to come here, and they have this situation where they're not a burden on anybody. And I want to get into this because you're a Western Wisconsin kid. You're coming back here to Western Wisconsin. You know as well as I do, the dirty secret amongst Republican legislators in Wisconsin and the Midwest is, without migrant labor, both legal and illegal, by the way, Wisconsin dairy farms would be toast. Most agriculture would be toast, because I took calls when I worked for Dale Schultz. I took calls from farmers in Western Wisconsin that at the time, this was 10 years ago, were paying $17, $18, $19 an hour. And they said, Todd, I can't get anybody who wants to come work for me. Mm-hmm. And so how does this affect labor? And then I want to ask you at the same time, how does this affect voting in Wisconsin and other places?
Yeah. So the twofold. One, you're absolutely right. Those massive, and there's one over by Spring Valley that I know somebody who's involved with it. I mean, it's gigantic. They milk 24 hours a day,
yep,
right? Like, it's crazy. And the workers, it's primarily Hispanic people working, because there aren't enough people in that part of, you know, that want those jobs, or I think if they're, you know, so there's that. That would shut down. So there's the economic angle of it. But I think where immigration ends up, where the rubber is meeting the road politically, is a lot of it's cultural. And yet they'll be like, well, these immigrants are taking our jobs, except for the fact that the people, you know, can't. It just is a good soundbite, right? But then it ends up changing the communities. And it becomes... Interestingly enough, like, part of the reason why it becomes an issue nationally, politically, the way that it has, is presidential politics. It's a big deal in Iowa for the same reasons it's a big deal in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal for a different set of industries in South Carolina, but the same dynamic. In both cases, you have states that are, in Iowa's case, the influx of migrants has been, like, Marshalltown, Iowa is now 50% Hispanic. That has been a real culture shock.
Wow. Yeah.
And it injects into presidential politics, right? Because everybody has to go to Iowa. In South Carolina, you know, obviously you have, you know, more diversity in the population, organically, but it has also, you also have Deep South. You have a history of it being a big issue. And so those have led our politicians. No one wants to touch it. I mean, I was working for John McCain's presidential campaign, and I remember, in, this is 2007. Mm-hmm. And we were doing these teletown halls into South Carolina, and they were clobbering, even with military people, clobbering McCain over trying to solve the issue in a bipartisan way.
And he represented a border state.
He did. And they, Lindsey Graham was on the call, and they were calling him, they kept calling it Shamnesty, and, like, yeah. I mean, it was just, they were just brutal. And so it's died so many times, and it's trapped in sound bites, and it's red meat on both sides, particularly on the right. And they don't want to have, it's contrived grievance. You know, I talk about contrived grievance a lot. There's less contrived grievance on the left. The contrived grievance is mostly on the right. And immigration has a lot of it. The whole idea that, yes, Ronald Reagan, you know, gave a pathway to citizenship the last time major immigration reform was done.
Yep.
But Ronald Reagan hasn't been president for almost 50 years.
Right.
Right. And nothing has been done since.
Yeah.
And the idea that it would reward illegal behavior, that one of the things that's crazy, I do this polling on extremism, and just for a guy named, for an entity called Lord Ashcroft Polls. And we studied it, and one of the biggest fears on the right, we ask people what their fears are, is the idea of illegal immigrants coming to America and committing terrorist acts in their country. In other words, coming across the southern border. Crazy part is every major terrorist that's come into the United States has come in legally through visas.
Isn't that amazing?
It just doesn't happen.
Right.
But the idea that the caravans, all of that stuff. But it must be resonating, because Biden probably wouldn't have gone to the border if it weren't.
Yeah. No, I thought that too. And I mean, I've only been in a room with Joe Biden once, but I certainly don't know him at all. My sense is he's a decent human being who wants to actually try to do something good and maybe to start solving this problem. That's my sense, that yes, politically he needs to do it. But I also think there's just a sense that he's like, man, this is a problem. What can we do? You think that's accurate or not so much?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in a room, a smaller setting with him when he was chair of Senate Foreign Relations a couple of times. And he was meeting with Belarusians and Russian people who were fighting for democracy. And there was no political reason for him to do it. It was just the right thing to do. In fact, once with McCain, the two of them. Yeah, I think he's just a good person. I think whether you agree or disagree with him. Now, I know that the rhetoric on the right is such that they've amped it up that he's evil and all these biblical apocalyptic stuff, which is just crazy.
Hold the thought, Trigby. We got to take a quick break here. Back with one more segment with Trigby Olson on the Lincoln Project. You're listening to the Todd Allmall Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allmall Show. Time is 8:50 on a Wednesday, the 11th of January, 2023. Trigby Olson on the Lincoln Project is our guest, as per usual, on a Wednesday morning. Speed round, Trigby. 7 minutes, 40 seconds left in our time together. It always goes way too fast. I want to get to several things. Let's just button up this migration, immigration issue. I want to get your thoughts on, and not too deep, but a quick thought on 2024. What baffles me is Hispanic, Latino, U.S. citizens who should be voting for Democrats on almost every issue, including getting their family here legally, are tending to vote more Republican based pretty much on abortion and in some ways gay rights. All these social issues that Republicans are doing a much better job going after Latinos than Democrats. What's up with that?
They're very Catholic. I mean, I don't mean to give you a short answer.
No, it's true. I agree.
It's a big part of it.
So Democrats, how do you go after the Pope?
And quite honestly, I think Democrats have taken them for granted. They've assumed.
Agreed. 100%.
And the other piece of it is, Hispanic Americans, depending on where they come from, like certainly the Latinos and definitely the Cubans, they're incredibly patriotic Americans because they've escaped. Like they know, and for better or worse, they feel like there are the far left of the Democrat Party bags on America and what makes America great, and they don't like it. Yeah. So there's that too.
Totally agree. Joe Biden, we are talking off the air. I think it deserves a little on air talk, talking about moving ahead to 2024. You're asking me Wisconsin, who gives the best opposition against Donald Trump, assuming he's the nominee. I said I think it's still Joe Biden. I still think that he gives Democrats the best race. Looking ahead, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Joe Biden probably is their. I mean, it's not Democrats will do what Democrats will do, and we'll have illiberalism on the Republican side, so we'll be forced to focus on democracy. I think Joe Biden. I think they have, this is what I will say. One thing that is happening, it didn't happen so much with Evers, but there are Democrat governors who have been doing what Tommy Thompson and John Engler and Tom Ridge and those guys did when Democrats, people forget when Tommy Thompson came in, Democrats had controlled the state legislature for like 30 years, right? Yep. He came in, guys like you and I ended up working on special elections all over because he kept appointing Democrats to exactly. jobs in state government. Exactly. Gretchen Whitmer has been doing the same thing. Josh Shapiro is going to govern like that. They will do what those governors did. And I think the Democrats are starting to develop a bench. Whether a Gretchen Whitmer could get the nomination now, probably not. But I think Joe Biden would be status quo. Warts and all. It's like that Saturday Night Live ad that they had.
I want to talk a little about the Packers. You are a Packer owner, and the Packers did not end on a...
There's a lot of those in your parts. three quarters, maybe all of your audience, but
like exactly, that's why it's relatable. I did not go buy a share, but you did, and or shares. What are your thoughts on the Packers wrapping up their season? Aaron Rodgers, one of our hosts here on the Packer Outright Opinion, Jason Hafeman, said he thinks that Rodgers is coming back next year, and all this talk about retirement was simply to get the focus away from his terrible performance in the last game.
I think there may be some truth to that. Here's my thing, and it does kind of get back to the ownership, and I'm wondering about sports journalists. Because the question I would be asking is, somebody in the Packer organization or multiple people signed off on guaranteeing $58 million to Aaron Rodgers for next year and another $58 or $60 million for the following year that he gets no matter what he does, unless they trade him. And here's the thing, the Green Bay, and I think it's Mark Murphy, and he needs to be held accountable. And I may start a movement of Packer shareholders right here. Mark Murphy went and got a bunch of Packer fans to give $200-$300 of their hard earned money. And somebody in that organization thought it was a good idea to give a 39-year-old quarterback that much money guaranteed. And now the rubber's meeting the road. And Mark Murphy, you need to answer how that happened, because you took $200 of my money and basically transferred it to Aaron Rodgers. And I want to understand the thinking. And if it doesn't work out, if Aaron Rodgers is washed up and decides to not retire and take all that money, then somebody's head needs to roll.
Agreed. That's a hot take.
I mean, think about it. They were able to do that because they went out and sold all these shares in part because of that. And where's the accountability? They had a transition plan. If this blows up, somebody needs to be held accountable.
But yet you could go around the world and tell people you're a part owner of an NFL team. Isn't that worth something?
I can do that. I can do that. And honestly, my shares of stock that will be given to my daughters are some of the most valuable thing I own. But they put that decision that was made, and this isn't just because Aaron Rodgers didn't play at an MVP level this year, but the question you have to ask is, they had a transition plan in place. They decided to roll it back with Aaron Rodgers. And maybe it was just he was hurt or whatever. But if this decision doesn't work out, given the dynamic of how much was guaranteed to them and how they got themselves stuck, and given the fact that they are publicly owned, this isn't like they were just spending some billionaire Dan Snyder, right, out here in D.C., wasting his money. So what? He can do that. Right. But there has to be more accountability. And I'm not sure that Murphy views – I don't know that he fully gets that. He pays lip service to it. And that guy is a politician and an operator. I've met him a couple of times. But boy, somebody needs to be asking those questions if this doesn't work out.
Yeah, I agree on Murphy. I totally think I've the only time I met him is in an airport. And I had a 2-minute conversation with him. But he is a politician. And this whole
he's an operator.
Yeah.
Total operator.
I mean, there is a guy who could actually run for U.S. Senate.
He could. So I've met him 3 times.
Okay.
Once in a formal work environment, once in the parking lot at FedEx Field, where I ended up talking to him for quite a while. And within 30 seconds, he knew what I did. And at the time, I was kind of helping run McConnell's political. Uh-huh. So he knew that, and he was like, boring into asking questions as soon as he found out what I did, boring into questions like, is this somebody who could potentially be helpful to me and the Green Bay Packers? I mean, then one other time with my kids, and he was incredibly gracious. You know, it was at Lambeau Field.
I guess part of those attributes make him a good president, because he gets right to the chase and finds out how people can help not just the Packers, but him. But anyway.
But he may not have been willing to make the hard decision on Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers ended up, they knew, you know.
Very quickly, does he retire or not? Does he come back?
Would you turn down $59 million?
No, guaranteed. I'll sit there in my duff for $59 million. Trigby Olson, Lincoln Project, you're amazing. We appreciate your time.